Lee Chambers
on Cambridge 105 Radio.
And in the studio with me to talk about Rare Disease Day, I've got Jo Balfour. Good morning, Jo.
Good morning. Thank you for having us.
Nice to have you here. Dr. Thomas Heemstra.
Good morning.
Is that the right pronunciation?
Correct, yes.
And hopefully on the phone I've got Alison. Alison, are you there?
Hello. Hi.
Hello, Alison. Good to have you with us. Well, let's start with you, Alison, actually, because it's we're talking about Rare Disease Day, which is this Thursday. Your son has a rare condition. Is that right?
That's correct. Yes, my son David has a rare epilepsy, which is called ring chromosome 20 syndrome, or R20, we call it for short.
And how did you find out that he had that condition?
So we didn't find out until he was about 8 years old. He actually appeared to develop perfectly normally as a child, but he had his first seizure when he was 6 years old, which scared us all completely, and we rushed him to A&E, didn't know what was happening. And the disease began to progress from that point onwards until the point that he was having 20 or 30 seizures every day, and they really didn't know what type of epilepsy it was, and it took 2 years to identify the diagnosis, which was purely by chance by the local paediatrician, who suspected an underlying chromosome disorder. But she was as shocked as we were to find David's diagnosis, because she'd never heard of ring chromosome 20 syndrome.
So the fact that it was a rare condition, that has created its own challenges, I suppose, the first one being the delay in diagnosis.
Yes, absolutely. And obviously, without a diagnosis, neither as a patient family or the healthcare professionals that have been supporting myself and David really knew what to expect. But actually, receiving the diagnosis, whilst we have a little bit more understanding, there's so limited information on the disease that we really don't have any better information about treatment or what the prognosis might be for David as he gets older, how the disease will develop and what his support needs will be over time, whether his seizures will get any better or any worse.
Well, thank you, Alison. Jo, you're from the Cambridge Rare Diseases Network. Is Alison's experience, is that a common one?
It is a common one, unfortunately. The time to diagnosis is often very slow for those searching for an answer for their undiagnosed condition. It can take many years. So, yes, it's not unusual at all.
So that's why answers my next question, really, why the need for a Rare Disease Day?
The International Rare Disease Day, it has three main focuses. One is to raise awareness, despite the fact that there are 3.5 million people in the UK who are affected by a rare disease at some point in their life. It's still a relatively unknown area of healthcare and science. So Rare Disease Day is to raise awareness amongst the public, to raise the profile amongst policymakers, and to really get industry on board, because it's the biotech and the pharmaceutical companies that are going to help in creating solutions. On top of that, it's really a celebration. So it's about all of the patient groups, many of which are really tiny. So a group like Alison's will have a limited number of members because of, you know, the fact that there's only 150 people in the world that have that condition. So it gives them a platform to really come together and collaborate and to have a bigger voice.
150 people with that condition. I was going to ask you how you are defining a rare disease.
Well, within Europe, it's the occurrence of one person in every 2,000.
Right, so one in 150 people in the world, Alison. I suppose when you know that, it makes sense, doesn't it, that the diagnosis took so long, but very frustrating for you.
Yes, it is. It is definitely. But we do perceive that because the diagnosis is difficult, you actually have to diagnose it by chromosome testing, which actually now with the latest genetic testing techniques, it is actually getting used less and less unless you specifically suspect chromosome disorder. So identifying the disease, we suspect, is actually reducing. It's potentially in decline because the new whole genome sequencing and exome sequencing type techniques will not pick up ring chromosomes. So we have a whole awareness an educational piece that we need to do. But we do suspect that there are many, many millions of people around the world affected by epilepsy. 70% of which have an undiagnosed or unknown cause for their seizures. How many of them may actually have Ringworm Zone 20 syndrome, but I've never been properly tested. So we suspect it's underdiagnosed and underreported.
And Dr. Thomas Heemstra, you're here from the School of Clinical Medicine. I guess there are particular challenges for clinicians in addressing the needs of people with rare diseases or even identifying them in the first place.
I think it's very difficult sometimes because of the delay in diagnosis. Firstly, many doctors, many GPs will never see a case of a certain rare disease in their entire career. And so that's one of the reasons for the delay in diagnosis. And because there aren't very many patients with any individual rare disease, it makes it very hard to research treatments for rare diseases. If one is only doing research with one or two patients involved, if there are any differences, it's hard to tell whether those differences occur by chance or whether treatments are in fact effective. So taking the Ring 20 example, patients or families of patients with Ring 20 really need to come together in order to help research move forward. That's one of the biggest challenges.
And I hate to sound cynical about this, but pharmaceutical companies, they like to make the money as well. Is there a motivation for them to produce drugs when it's maybe only 150 people in the world that will use them?
I think that is always a challenge because there is a particular focus for pharmaceutical industries. Having said that, though, we can learn a lot from rare diseases, funnily enough, about more common diseases. And so there is an incentive to do research in rare disease because often what we learn from those conditions tells us a lot about how physiology works, and that can often tell us quite a lot about more common diseases and lead to better treatments for more common diseases.
There are actually many barriers for the companies as well in drug development for rare conditions. Within Cambridgeshire, we actually have, there is one company that specialises completely in rare disease drugs, and there's also another company which is currently looking at repurposing drugs. So this is where we take a drug that's already on market, that's already been considered to be safe, is in use, but it can be repurposed for a different condition. So there's some quite creative ideas out there at the moment about how do we hurry this up, because currently it can take 10-15 years longer to get a drug to market, especially when you're talking about so few people being involved and the costs being extremely high. So, yes, we're looking for other avenues and other ways to do this so that there's a many-pronged approach, really.
And the Rare Diseases Network, you put people in touch with each other. I'm guessing that support network is vital because people can feel quite isolated.
Absolutely, and that's really the crux of what we do. We provide platforms, events, forums, opportunities for everybody involved to meet together on a level playing field. So, for example, at our event that's on Thursday, the crucial thing there is that everybody takes part. So the patients will be there with their families, with their support groups, but also the medical professionals and the industry professionals. So that's really what we're about. We're providing opportunities to meet with each other and to really form very productive collaborative relationships.
Yes, well, tell me about the event on the 28th of February. It starts at 6 p.m. It's an evening lecture. It's free and open to the public.
It is. It's actually doors open at 5:30. There's some refreshments and drinks and time for networking. There's four lectures between 6 and 7:30, and that will include a panel. So as you register, you can put forward a question for the panel, and we'll be selecting some of those for the evening. So very much about getting the audience involved and voting. There'll be some voting technology as well. And then following that, we've got a drinks and nibbles reception, so a time for really the magic to happen, for people to meet and hopefully spark new ideas.
And you can find out about that and book tickets on Eventbrite.
That's right.
And Dr. Heemstra, are you optimistic about the future for people with rare diseases? Do you see promise in the research that's coming on?
I think I'm very optimistic. I mean, there have been initiatives like the Rare Disease Network that have made great strides really in bringing rare diseases to the forefront. And the fact that we're talking about it today is also really important. So there are new initiatives. In Cambridge, we have the Patient-Led Research Hub as well that provides resources directly to patients to facilitate research and to join patients up with researchers that are active in that particular area. So a lot is changing. The advances with genomic medicine also are helping. And so I think there is a lot of cause for optimism, but that doesn't mean that there aren't many challenges.
And Alison, if somebody's listening and they're affected by a rare disease or they know somebody who is, what's your message to them?
I would say one of the key things is to try and get as much information as you can, reliable information, and very importantly, get yourself a good support network. Get in touch with any patient organisation that may represent your specific rare disease, because they may likely be able to signpost you to the latest information and maybe put you in contact with other patients or families that are affected in the same way that you are. So you can actually talk to other people who are experiencing the same issues and concerns and challenges that you are, and just make you feel less alone out there, and hopefully come together to try and move things forward in terms of highlighting the unmet needs to the healthcare professionals and researchers to make some change for the future. You've got to be positive about this. Those of us who live with someone with a rare disease, we can't change that, but what we can change is what we do about it and the future for the optimal quality of life for those affected.
Thank you, Alison. Thank you for your time today. The evening lecture will doors open at 5:30, as you were saying, Joe, on this Thursday. And where is it?
That's a good question. I just thought it's actually at the Clinical School of Medicine. So head to Addenbrookes, the multi-storey car park. And literally, as you come out of the car park, down the ramp, it's on your left.
Lovely. And you can get more information at Eventbrite. If people want information about the Rare Diseases Network, where should they go?
They can head to our website, which is www.camrarediseases.org.
Thank you both for coming to the studio. Thank you, Alison, for your time on the phone. Good luck for Thursday.
Thank
I hope
you
it
very
goes
much.
Well.